that the occasion, getting to the players?
I don't know, it's just... It's
mentality thing?
No, nothing. Mentality.
But if you're not happy with the players...
This is pure mentality. How can you ask about mentality? It's not about mentality.
No, I mean, when the players had the problem, was that the mentality? What was it?
There's no mentality problem. This is pure mentality. This is pure mentality. You can bottle it up and sell it.
Absolutely.
This is, yeah, so why is the problem for mentality? It's the quality of our games. That's it. It has nothing to do with mentality.
Hello and welcome to the Sound of Football podcast, World Cup 2026. I'm Graham Sibley, and as ever, I'm joined by Jan Bilton.
Hello.
And Terry DeFellin.
Hold on, Graham. Hold on tight there. It's down. Down to the wire. That's a bit of a line from a song there by Norwegian band Aha. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the song is...
The Living Daylights.
It is The Living Daylights.
Yes, indeed, yeah. So, bit of a Bond symmetry there, but yes, yeah. Apt.
Yeah, set your hopes up way too high.
Living's in the way we die.
Yes.
Have I wandered on to your other podcast that you do?
Yeah, I'm afraid you have, actually. Yeah, this is normal for the sort of chat we have on the Odd Job pod, but no, of course, we are basking in the glory of England's decisive win against... The Norwegian invaders, all those Vikings in their horned hats, rowing across the North Sea. No more. No, we turn them back, just like we didn't do in the 9th century.
If we got to go that far, then Thomas Tuchel is in fact the modern day incarnation of Alfred the Great.
Well, probably, yes.
Anglo-Saxons, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, which is pretty good.
Yeah, absolutely.
These are the things you have to discover, isn't it, when you're an England fan? You have to look back in the history and try to make some kind of parallel with some kind of historic event. Obviously, France and Spain, they're easy. We've got plenty of wars against those. Argentina, I'm afraid that's rather too easy, that one. And Norway, well, we have to go back a bit further, but we can still dig one up. Yes, yeah, it's very rare that we can't find anything. Portugal's always a bit of a sticking point, isn't it?
We must have gotten to war with Portugal at some point.
God, no, we've been allies of Portugal for, like, I think 1,000 years. It's ridiculous.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
it is. It's the oldest treaty in the whole world.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh,
gosh. Yeah.
Well, hey, you can run off to Wikipedia and have a great evening now, can't you, Terry, after this recording, though, okay? After this recording.
Yeah, no, I fully intend to. What I won't be doing, though, is looking up some of those obnoxious history podcasts that are amongst the adverts.
You choose wisely. Which is a reference you won't hear on any of those history podcasts. God knows why. Anyway, let's talk about England-Norway briefly, because England did win with a little bit of help from technology, but not in the way that we'd normally expect help from technology. Terry, there were plenty of VAR checks during the game, weren't there? And you can argue one way or the other for most of them. But one thing that wasn't brought up on VAR was technology having a direct influence on one of the goals. What was your opinion on it then?
I didn't realise it happened like everybody else didn't realise it had happened, apart from the entire nation of Norway, who spotted it immediately and went, hold on, what's going on here? So I'm having a bit of difficulty here. Are we being gaslit by FIFA, who are saying, nope, that definitely never happened? Or are we being gaslit by Norway, who are saying, yep, that totally happened? If it did totally happen, then yeah, obviously the beach ball rule, you know, should have been invoked and the goal should have probably have been cancelled, I guess. But FIFA insists that what we're talking about is the ball hitting the spider cam wire and bouncing off and then landing at the feet of Harry Kane, I think it was. And then the England goal ensued. It's one of those things that you'd think would be clear cut. Did it or did it not hit the wire? And yet people seem to be arguing one or the other. It's... That grainy footage that I saw on Blue Sky didn't tell me anything at all.
No, it didn't.
I thought, that doesn't look... I don't know whether or not. Like, just because someone is saying that the ball clearly hits a wire, I'm not buying that.
Well, Terry, luckily we have a correspondent here right now who is very adept at looking at grainy footage and working out what actually happened to these things. And it's our colleague here, Jan. Jan, come on, you must have pored over that from multiple angles. Was there a puff of smoke behind the grassy knoll there? Did it really happen? Are the people of Norway just yanking our chains? Or did we hit a chain?
It's definitely not a conspiracy, as much as I'd like it to be, actually. But yeah, I watched the footage probably more times than there was healthy. But I didn't see the ball change direction other than the fact it was going up and then it came down. But I think that's gravity, isn't it? Rather than
well,
and I think because I've noticed that balls do that.
They do.
And I've seen it happen. In fact, I see it happen in every single match. And I don't think this one would be any different to any other match with, you know, it being played on Earth. So I think it was more gravity than anything else. And of course, because we've got the technology, why don't we use it? We did.
Yes.
FIFA used it. They used the snickometer, or whatever they call it in football, and there was no snick present. So I would say that was gravity. And I think the whole nation of Norway should just get over that. It's possibly sour grapes over that other battle in 1066 where we sent them packing.
What angle we haven't seen of it is the one actually from Spider-Cam. Now, if that goal kick is taken and Spider-Cam suddenly gets a bit wobbly, then you'd think maybe it did hit the wire. But we've not seen that footage. Well, maybe that's why we haven't seen that footage.
You see, that's the key footage. That's been denied us.
That's the Zabruder film, isn't it? That is.
So is this a conspiracy? So is this the well-known FIFA conspiracy against Norway that obviously, for various reasons, everybody hates and FIFA are absolutely dead set on not progressing? I don't know. Is that all?
Well,
I don't know where we are. Which conspiracy are we on now?
I don't know. Well, the main conspiracy that is quite sort of entry-level conspiracy, it's not even treated as a conspiracy. It's more treated as something like, oh, well, this is FIFA doing FIFA stuff. Is that these semi-finals that we have lined up now are the first time since FIFA started doing its rankings. This is the first time that the top four teams going into the tournament make up the four teams in the semi-final. Previously, no more than two of those teams had actually made it to the semi-finals for a tournament. When they made the draw, they actually, for the first time ever, seeded the top four teams. So that they wouldn't face each other. If they won their group, they wouldn't face each other until they got to the semi-final stage. And this is what's happened. They've rinsed through the tournament, most of them quite easily, really, to be honest. It's only England that have huffed and puffed a bit, and Argentina have huffed and puffed a bit. So we've got this thing where people are saying, well, yeah, these teams have been almost ushered into the semi-finals. What do we think about that? Terry, do you think that's a valid concern amongst people? Because I will say, if they hadn't been seeded, the way that they came out the pots, they wouldn't have met before the semi-finals anyway. The only thing that changed was France and Argentina swapping groups. So they would have had different paths.
So I suppose there's two things here. Is this a conspiracy? Does this warrant a conspiracy? No. Is it a sort of, could it be characterised as a design flaw maybe? Well, I mean, from what you've just said, Graham, I would say no. So I'm not altogether certain of all the things to get, jump up and down and get angry with FIFA about. This is probably one of those things. I wouldn't say that at all. So no, I'm not feeling that. I mean, I do feel that FIFA have created a situation where nobody can really trust them and no one really can believe a word they say. And so it then becomes much, much easier to subscribe to any number of conspiracy theories of any hue, because anything FIFA tell you, why would they believe them? I mean, FIFA say, oh, yeah, no, that it didn't hit the wire. We've got Snicko technology to say that it didn't hit the wire. And they say, well, I mean, how do we know that? I mean, like, what do you mean, like, you do all manner of things and seem to get away with it. So why should we believe you? And there we are. This has been the World Cup. It's been a brilliant World Cup. It's also been a terrible World Cup.
Yeah, and the way that FIFA have been selling tickets for this tournament does mean that teams that have a large international following, like Argentina, tickets are in demand for these teams, and they're willing to pay big, big, big money. And with FIFA's dynamic pricing, they are paying big, big, big money. So is there been more of an impetus for FIFA to keep teams like that in the competition, maybe give them an easier ride? And if so, why aren't Brazil here?
Well, it's the whole point of seeding, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, it's. I think we just, I don't, as again, I do like a conspiracy, but it sounds like this is more maths. I can't believe how logical I'm being tonight.
Yeah, I know.
It's a bit weird.
What happened to you, Jan?
I don't
They've
know.
They've got to you, haven't they?
They have, yeah. Yes.
No, no, I'm happy to step in immediately after and push back against that. As soon as Jan's finished, I want to answer back that.
But go.
Yeah, so, yeah, obviously, if you seed teams, the chances are that they're going to get to the semi-finals as it was designed, really. So it kind of is what it is. There are some chats, though, that Argentina have been given a bit of an advantage with some of the decision-making. I think there's someone in the group, I can't quite work out who, maybe wants to talk about that, so I'll leave that for Terry. But other than that, I think just to echo Terry's point in that there's been so much controversy following FIFA around under Infantino's rule over the years and in this World Cup that you're right, there's a trust element here and people just seeing conspiracies potentially where there are none. I've got no problem with those four teams being in the semi-finals. Even as a neutral, you'd want to see that. So not really the end of the world, I don't think. There is something to say about the ticket prices, though. I think when Ronaldo got knocked out of the World Cup, there was some other guys with him as well. I can't remember who they were. But when he got knocked out, I think the ticket prices for the next game, which was going to be a lot higher, dropped down on the old ticket exchange. So, it does probably make financial sense for them as well as a competition sense to have the big teams there.
Come on, Terry, step in.
Argentina have been partially carried through this tournament. Argentina are going through Act 1 of Rocky 3. They have yet to hit Club Alang. And when it happens, and it might well be that it's England that will do it, but I think that FIFA are hoping that it'll be Spain or France. It is absolutely within FIFA's interest to have Leo Messi in the final of that tournament because of the dynamic ticket pricing model. Now, all right, does that mean that they're like putting pressure on referees to be kind to Argentina? I don't know. I don't know that. I honestly don't know that. But it wouldn't surprise me. And it wouldn't surprise me at all if FIFA developed a culture amongst the referees that was trying to allow the stars to be able to shine and as brightly as possible, which I think is a language that you can use and then you could then associate to say, well, I think if you were just a little bit kinder to these teams, you know, where these stars are. Now, obviously, with Cristiano Ronaldo and those guys that we have that treaty with, you know, that's out of the question because that is a completely and utterly dysfunctional football team. Because of Cristiano Ronaldo, that team is just nowhere near as good as it should be because of Ronaldo. Argentina and Messi is a very, very different situation. Messi is fully integrated into that side. He's the basis of the entire team. They all work for him and he works for them, crucially. So it's a much, much more different thing. But on another day, Brillo Mbola doesn't get that second yellow card. I think that feels, to me, convenient. But I think it's the Egypt game that, for me, I feel quite strongly that there might well have been shenanigans there. I don't think that second Egypt goal, well, it wasn't a goal, was it? But I think that disallowed Egypt goal should not have been disallowed on that basis, personally. All right, I'm not necessarily saying that this is absolute direct conspiracy, but I do think that referees, and I think this about not just in the World Cup, but in general, I think referees do get starstruck. And I think that they do, you know, especially when faced and up close with people who are absolute idols and icons of the sport, you know, they can get a bit starstruck and I think can make, you know, decisions that I don't think are entirely just. And I think that although, you know, Egypt, they had the means to win that game, don't get me wrong. Like Senegal against Belgium, ultimately, it was their game to close out. They should have closed that game out. But I think if you look at it like that and then you look at the game against Cap Verde, nothing wrong with that game, but they struggled against Cap Verde. Cap Verde were really, really good for Cap Verde. They weren't actually really, really good. That was a game that number one ranked FIFA team should have been able to have won quite comfortably. So I feel as though the organisers and the hosts are with Argentina and want Messi to do well. And at the very least, to get to the final for strong and sound commercial reasons.
Yeah,
I quite agree. This kind of touches on what we were talking about last week as well, with Ronaldo being allowed to play in the opening couple of games because it's Ronaldo, keeping the Americans on side with rescinding Balogun's suspension and just making sure that Messi stays on the pitch. I was chatting to my son about this yesterday, when he's quite annoyed, and I've got some sympathy for him, like people, you know, wetting their pants every time Messi touches the ball. And his view was that in the opening game, I think against Algeria, Messi should have been sent off.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I've got some sympathy for. So they don't really help themselves. I think there's a difference here between seeding teams so they get to a stage where you can sell that commercially, and that kind of, you know, I can understand that. But where you've got games where it feels like certain teams are being given a bit of an easier ride, and I accept, Terry, you're right, the occasion may get to a referee. They are one person. It's quite lonely out there. And if you've got all the noise that's going on and all that pressure, and then you've got, you know, for example, Messi in front of you, and you're thinking, this guy needs to go, you wouldn't be human if you didn't kind of feel that pressure and maybe made what turned out to be the wrong decision. I don't know. But I don't know whether this is something that comes up in every major competition, the Premier League included, and all of the others, that you kind of go, well, the better teams, I mean, we argued about it for years with Manchester United, always seem to get the rub of the green. You know, the better you are, sometimes the luckier you get can be the argument. But it's a really difficult one. And I would hate to think that it all fell down on the referee's shoulders, because demonising referees brought us VAR, and we should be careful about that.
Yeah, this is wise words.
Well, you say it's a lonely experience, Jan, but there are 9 officials for these quarterfinals. 9 referees. 9 of them. Remember the days when it used to just be 3? 1 ref and 2 linos? No, now we have 9. 9, yes. We have the 3, those ones. We have the 4th official. We have the spare at the ground. Now we have the VAR, the 2 assistant VARs, and now a standby VAR as the 9th man. I don't know why we don't just find another 2 and just create a whole team of them. That'd be fun, wouldn't it, Terry?
I'd like to see that for sure. Maybe we could get them to participate in the 3rd place playoff, because it's just as useless a competition. Yeah, that 9th one is the guy in the Messi shirt and the large baseball bat standing in the background, making certain that everything is fair and above board. Yeah, Jan's point, I think, is still valid, though. I mean, it can be an isolating experience out there, and the other officials, or 8 of them, are there to support the man in the middle, whose job it is really, I mean, it's supposed to be that he's supposed to be the final say in these matters. And you do have to ask yourself whether or not that's actually what happens. I mean, all I'm saying is that I am concerned that there may be interpersonal political dynamics within those referees that create a degree of chaos. And we've seen chaotic officiating. I don't think there's any doubt about that. Yeah. Jan's right about to point about things like Premier League. I mean, Alex Ferguson, you know, he deliberately tried to create an environment in Old Trafford where the referees would be under pressure to give the home team the advantage and the benefit of tight calls. And the reason why he did that is because Shankly and Paisley back in the day at Anfield did exactly the same thing. So there is merit in that. But it's just got to be fair and not necessarily commercially driven or driven by outside forces. It's all got to be sporting. I mean, it all sounds, I mean, like, I feel like I'm getting my excuses in early for Wednesday. Maybe I am. Because of the Balogun thing, I just find it difficult to watch this World Cup and take it 100% seriously. And once you've got that in your head, it's difficult to clear it out, I'm afraid.
We keep returning to the Balogun decision because it's an extremely important one. But also the story just won't go away. And it emerged today that the disciplinary panel, such as it is, was basically one guy. One guy made the decision, and that's the chairman of the panel. This didn't go to a vote or anything or a discussion. It was just him looking at it and saying, yeah, he doesn't have to serve his ban. And apparently this is the way the disciplinary panel's been working all the way along for years now. Even though there's 18 people on it, they never meet. They never get involved in the decision making. So it's only actually the chairman or his immediate underling that actually do this. And it's usually just one guy that says, right, okay, this is going to happen instead. So I don't know how many of the other panels that FIFA have, notably the ethics panel, whether or not that has exactly the same function, whether or not it has a whole list of people that may or may not exist, like directors of some Panamanian company, or whether or not they actually do something. So it of course, it undermines your faith in what FIFA are doing. And it's no wonder with all this pressure that Gianni Infantino this week has decided to rally support from the people who didn't get to go to the World Cup this year by saying that next time they may well have a chance to get there because it's going to be expanded to 64 teams. The whole announcement of expanding to 64 teams, that's not a distraction, is it? It's not Gianni Infantino saying, look over there, puppies.
Yeah, it's not like releasing military UFO footage that the president's been doing recently, or creating a storm over a player that should have been suspended to have people looking the other way, or resigning as an MP for Clacton. It is a distraction because the eyes of the world are on the World Cup and there's been some controversy. Isn't there an election coming up for the FIFA president? So that's a good way of getting more people to vote for you. I mean, I mentioned those two things because this is exactly the same sort of shit, isn't it? We can spot these things now, but are unable to do anything about them.
My theory is that Egypt are absolutely jumping up and down and are absolutely furious with FIFA over the manner of their exit. Justifiably or not, but they are. And Gianni Infantino relies on a lot of African federations for his votes. It's a big, big constituency. So there's part of me that thinks that he's trying, yeah, to distract from the Balogun thing, but also perhaps trying to head off any possible African revolt that might affect his position, because that I think that is his kind of chief cohort. I mean, he has support all over the world. I mean, he spent the last 7 months prior to the World Cup in South America, doing South American things, hanging out doing a lot of stuff, which is interesting. It's always interesting to see where Gianni goes for any length of time. He has a camera crew that follow him around and they create content and you can see what he does. He's obviously on manoeuvres for the election next year. He's probably going to stand unopposed. But I think also if this particular World Cup becomes any more shitfesty, then there's always a possibility of somebody running against him, which he would beat them, I'm sure, but it would mean he'd have to fight an election campaign. And I think he's far too busy doing Gianni things to really concern himself and lower himself to elections. I mean, like, you know, this isn't any kind of meaningful democracy at FIFA. And so he throws this out like the proverbial Malibu Stacey's new hat. And to a degree, we all run after it. I mean, we're talking about it now. And, you know, and I think for a lot of people, it's exciting news, irrespective of whether you think it's a good idea or not. It's still exciting news. Then the matches start quite soon, and then the World Cup moves on. And then the World Cup stops, and most people, like, turn away and go back to their lives. And all the football fans turn away and go back to their clubs.
Well, let's talk about actual football then. Well, football to come anyway. Let's talk about the semi-finals, see what we think. We did pretty well on our predictions, didn't we? The last three teams we had were England, Spain and France. And here they are, all three of them in the semi-finals. England, Argentina. The first time Messi's going to play England.
Really?
That was a stat that surprised me. Jan, how do you think that's going to go?
It's going to be interesting, obviously, because it's the World Cup semi-final. You know, there's a bit of baggage there since 1986, and we all know what happened there. There was probably a little bit more feistiness in that game because of the war that had happened a few years before, but that's now ancient history. But because of some of the things that we've talked about today about Argentina and it being England, I'm slightly concerned about it. But this is knockout football. It's not always going to be pretty. And this could be, I think, a really, really great game. I think England can probably beat Argentina. I think they really can because they've shown some real character. But Argentina aren't just Messi. And I think it's very lazy for people to think that. Just look at Alvarez's goal in the last game, just to show the talent that they have at their disposal. So it's going to be a real test. But if you want to win the World Cup, then you've got to beat the best teams. And they're the current holders. And you can argue, you know, have they been given a helping hand to get there? But even if they hadn't, you know, they would have gone far in the competition anyway. I don't think there's anything to say that they wouldn't have got to the semi-finals anyway. So it's a good test. You don't want to get through to the final having not faced one of the best sides in the world. England had a real test against Norway, had a real test against Mexico. And this is just another one that they're going to have to overcome if they want to get to the final. T- to get beaten by France.
Well, we'll get to that in a second. I've got a feeling that England should do well here.
Of course you do. I know what I think, lads. I think England are going to win this one. You've been saying that since 1990.
I know. This time, we've got Jude Bellingham.
More than any other time.
Yes, and that's the thing about it. We have put in some pretty below-average performances and got through. We've yet to rely on penalties. This team is playing well, as long as we can stick to a defensive unit. I've got a feeling that, considering how Switzerland controlled that game against Argentina without being able to press home that advantage, I think we've got goals in us. If we can have that period of dominance, we can score against this Argentine side. And I think if we go to the last 10 minutes 2-0 up, I think we're going to stay 2-0 up. I don't think we're going to suffer the same problems that Egypt did. But then again, craziness can happen. It's a semi-final. But I do think it's going to be a really good game. Terry?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's contingent on, obviously, some players, of course. Obviously, Jude Bellingham continuing his good form. I mean, he did look absolutely baked at the end of that game. And I think we need to see Harry Kane, obviously, like, showing. But also Declan Rice, who was substituted. I don't know what his situation is, but, you know, he's been ill. And, you know, he's a terrific player and absolutely vital, I think, for maintaining, you know, because he is kind of box to box, isn't he? But he has so much a role to play along with Anderson in maintaining and helping and supporting the defence. In what will be, and right, Brianne is quite right to point out that Argentina are more than Messi. But all I would say to that is that, you know, a lowering tide does sink all boats. And I think that if you can restrict Messi, then you do damage Argentina in a way that I think if you restrict Bellingham, you don't necessarily with England or indeed Kane for that matter. And yeah, I mean, England have got class finishers. We can score goals. Switzerland, you're quite right, Graham. Yeah, it seems to have, you know, quite a good deal of control of the game in a very positive way, but don't have the class to be able to finish off their chances. England do. And that's the difference between England and a lot of the other teams. You know, I mean, you know, Argentina struggled to beat what I would consider to be a second-tier UEFA side. And, you know, that tells you something. So, yeah, I mean, I think objectively, I think it's definitely England's to win. But, you know, obviously England have to turn up, they have to play well, and they do have to rely to an extent on maybe Argentina maybe not showing up, which I don't think is going to happen at all. I think they're massively showing up for this game.
I think so.
So it's going to be really interesting. Well, I mean, the thing about England, when they've been playing well in this tournament, which again has not been very often, but like, let's look at their signature game. England's signature game for the next 10 years, if they don't win the World Cup, is going to be the Mexico game, right? Because it's classic England. They weren't brilliant. No one's going to give them any beauty prizes. England are never a team that win beauty prizes for playing football. Not like France, who are just amazing to watch. England have always been like super functional, you know, and that's just who they are. Where England's the entertainment factor and where the drama is, the drama that they bring, the chaos to a degree that they bring, and that kind of English arrogance that really, really annoys people. That's the fun in watching England, if indeed you can call it fun. And that's what they've got to bring to Argentina. And it could be one for the ages. I mean, it could be like England versus Mexico was the greatest performance in England's history since 1966 until a couple of weeks later when they beat Argentina. I think it's going to be a little bit too much to expect to win the final. But then when you're in it, then we can have that conversation. Or we won't have that conversation then because it'll have happened by the time we next meet.
Yeah, I think England have gone through a bit of good performance, not so good performance throughout this. They flip from one to another. Start off with a great performance against Croatia, then a not-so-great performance against Ghana, and then a creditable 2-0 against Panama. And then you've got DR Congo, the grind that was that. And then you've got Mexico. And then you've got the grind that was Norway. So now I think we're now due another good performance. Another good performance, I think. Yes.
That's how it works.
That's how it works, listeners. Completely how it works.
Skips a generation.
It does, yeah, exactly. Now, we said that Argentina have had an easy ride to it. And yes, France have dazzled during this competition. But they've yet to face another group winner yet. In this knockout phase, they've played two teams that finished third in their group. They've played Sweden and they played Paraguay. And in the last game, they played Morocco, who finished second in their group. So what's going to happen when they face Spain? Are they going to be able to swagger as much as they have done throughout this competition? Remember, when they played the team that did finish second in their group, that was the last game of their group against Norway, and Norway 10 changes. So we've yet to see them go up against a side that has been consistently good in this tournament. Remember Rocco? They barely beat Scotland. So are France as good as we think they are? Or have they not really been tested? Are Spain going to have them? Jan?
Possibly. Spain conceded their first goal of the World Cup against Belgium the other day, and Belgium gave them a really good game. They really did. So they are not invincible. They are brilliant, but they're not invincible. And I think the same goes for France as well. You're quite right to point out, you know, they started wonderfully and had a really good group stage. Good win against Sweden, but then Paraguay, who were just a masterclass of housery, as we've already discussed, really made them look, I don't want to say the word ordinary, but like they had to really, really pull out the stop to beat Paraguay. And on another day, that could have, you know, with a bit of luck, that could have gone the other way. They got through that, and then you're right, Morocco, and there's obviously some history there, but no adverts in this one, in this history podcast, guys. They overcame, but they had to work really, really hard. So bringing them together with a team of the quality of Spain, those players will be used to playing against Mbappe and Dembele, who have been outstanding, but they're going to have to really, really get it right against Spain. So that's going to be, I mean, that is quite literally a clash of the titans, isn't it? I mean, that is arguably the two best teams in the tournament, in the world, and there can be only one. So I think you're right. It's their toughest challenge, without a shadow of a doubt, and I think that Spain could definitely do them.
Terry?
People may well look back on it and say that was the final, if the winner goes on to win the World Cup. Probably the two best teams in the tournament. I absolutely accept that France have not had it all their own way. They have at times looked dominant without necessarily being dominant. The way that they play is very free, appears very free, and they've got some terrific attacking players who are just so much fun to watch. And I think that sometimes that can mask maybe a sort of truth behind that actually they are struggling. It isn't as straightforward. The Paraguay game is an excellent example. Paraguay, beyond anything else, being incredibly well organised, really, really tough to beat, and France having to work really hard. Actually, funnily enough, I was not impressed with the way Morocco played against France. So I thought they were poor, and I think that France worked a little bit too hard, and I think that they showed them a little bit less respect. I think that they could have blown Morocco away. I thought Morocco let themselves down, a little bit too eager to talk the talk without really walking the walk there. Look forward to see what they can do in 4 years' time, actually, Morocco, but that was disappointing for them. So, yeah, I mean, I mean, there is an argument that none of the teams have been truly, truly tested in this Final Four. And again, that goes back to what we're talking about the notion that maybe they have kind of been carried. So when we criticise Argentina for not having been convincing, we could easily make that same criticism against France, although I'm not sure it's true because of Paraguay. And we could easily say the same thing about Spain, although I'm not sure that's sure because of Belgium. And we could say the same thing about England. Well, no, I don't know whether that's true because of Mexico. So this is the sort of moment, if you like, the Final Four. This is the World Championship, isn't it? The four best teams. And yeah, you could all argue that they've had, you know, ups and downs on their way here. But that's right, isn't it? I mean, it's a World Championship. None of them should get there easily.
No, I think the vibe when the knockout stage started was that England were in a tough quarter. They were in with Brazil, Japan, Norway, Mexico. And that felt like a tough group. Argentina was seen as the easiest one, with only really, say, Colombia, Egypt and Switzerland really being the kind of standouts in there. France's quarter was with Germany, Netherlands and Morocco. And the only team they've had to face out of those three was Morocco, because Germany weren't all that and neither were the Netherlands. I think with Spain, yeah, you've got Portugal, USA and Belgium. And you would expect them to come out top in those, given the fact that Portugal have the problems that we've already mentioned, the fact that they're carrying Ronaldo. And incidentally, I'm really scared now because without him around, that team is going to be amazing.
Except that they've just appointed Jorge Jesus as the coach.
Excellent.
So we will be seeing Ronaldo for a while yet.
Great. As long as he stays for the next Euros, then I'm happy.
Absolutely.
Thinking it out. Okay, so who's the final going to be between then, guys? I'm going to say Spain-England. That's my prediction for the final. And the France-Argentina one that everyone's thinking, that's going to be played on Saturday night, the third place playoff. Jan, do you agree or do you have your own idea?
My idea is that if England are going to win the World Cup, you've got to beat the number one team. So I would like to see England, France and England overcome France. That would be the one to say that we definitely beat the best to become the best.
Okay, and that's your prediction for the final then, is it? Yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
Cool. Terry?
My prediction for the final?
Yes.
Pain. I backed France to win. I didn't put any money on it. I had predicted that France would win the World Cup. So I guess by that logic, I should say that it's going to be France versus England because I think that England should beat Argentina. I think that they should. I think they are the better team. But now that I'm confronted with the reality, I just think it's really hard to see anyone getting past Spain because they're just so bastard hard to beat, frankly. And that's who I fear the most in the final.
Mm.
I fear if we get to the final that we'll play Spain and we'll lose again because I just think we just don't know how to beat Spain. So I hope it's France, but I think it will be Spain. I think it's going to be England versus Spain.
Well.
And Spain win.
There you have it, listeners. Two of us think it's going to be England-Spain. One of us think it's going to be England-France. But, say, unprompted, completely unprompted by me, we all think England are going to win on Wednesday. So, of course, by the time you listen to this, it'll probably be Thursday or Friday when you're out with your dog and you think, God, Jeff, these losers.
Bunch of jokers. Why do I listen to this shitty podcast?
Oh, yeah, it's only 40 minutes. Yeah, that's why I listen to it.
And it's free and there's no adverts.
Yes, that's why you listen to it, listeners. Come on. Because you're grumpy and you hate adverts, don't you?
And you think, I could do that. I could do my own podcast and I'd be great at it. I'd be better at those guys. And we make you feel better.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, I mean, of course, you're never going to be asked to do it yourself, which is great. You shouldn't, because it's a complete waste of your time.
I was asked to do it one time, a long time ago.
And you said yes. Yes, you damn fool.
Yeah. And then you discovered it's like buying a timeshare. You just can't get out of
I find the whole thing about signing away my soul in my own blood a little bit over the top in the pentagram you made me stand in. All very strange. But, there you go.
Yeah, well, you know, it's a standard clause, chum.
Well, we've made our predictions now, so we can't talk about anything else. We'll put this episode to bed, listeners. So hopefully the dog walk has been done and your poo bag's full and you're putting it in the bin now. So from me, Graham Sibley, from Jan Bilton and from Terry DeFellin, it's goodbye.
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 Get in touch with us on Blue Sky or Instagram, where we are at Sound of Football, or go to sofpodcast.com. Like us, share us, rate us and review us. Do it now! Come on, England!
I feel I've allowed myself to be swept up in World Cup hysteria now, which is probably why I'm saying that England's definitely going to get there when I don't think there's a definite about it, is there?
There's nothing definite about it at all, Chum. It's going to be the worst 3 hours of our lives.
Yeah, it's going to be awful. I was just thinking that. It's nice to have something to look forward to, isn't it? And I was like, oh, I'm going around to some friends to watch England-Argentina on Wednesday. And while it'll be lovely to go around to my friends, it will not be wonderful to watch that game.
It's going to be awful. It's just going to be the worst thing. Good mate of ours has got a gig and is still going. So good for him. If I had a gig, I'd probably just go. Oh, God.
Oh, remember those great days when you could just go to sleep and football would happen? That was great, wasn't it?
That was great. Whatever happened to those days is wake up in the morning and say, ah, the football's happened, and I didn't have to sit through it and wish I was dead.